I'm Amy.
I'm Delia.
And I'm Wendell. And welcome to
Yes
But
Why
Podcast. Yeah.
I like the idea that there's different journeys and that, like, people sometimes feel like there's only one way to do it. Like, even just when I was talking earlier about the way Austin sort of feels like it's set up. It's just one city.
Yeah.
Every city's different. Everything is, you know, way... And it would be interesting to know, like, if you're like, oh, I wish there was a city where this happened, and I interview some guy from Pittsburgh, and it turns out their way is the way you've always wanted to do it. And you're like, well, I could just move to Pittsburgh. And it's like, there's already great people.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, whatever your personal path is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. What is your personal path? Like, you've been doing stand-up for a little while. How many years?
Two.
Great.
This summer was my two-year anniversary. But like I said, it feels like so much longer because I came from improv and sketch.
Yeah.
So I'm not just like, I feel bad for the people that try stand-up that don't have any background. Like, they've, you
it
know what I mean?
Hard.
I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, it just takes them so long to not be terrified and to, like, just settle in their body. And, like, it's...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. I think it makes it a lot easier sometimes to be yourself if you've spent some time being other people.
Yeah.
Like, I have a few go-to characters. Right now I'm teaching a class, and the main crux of it is characters. So, like, every week I'm trying to get them to think of new ways to create characters. But it's like, you know, some people be like, oh, I only know how to be myself. And it's like, that's hilarious. I have no idea how to be myself.
Yeah.
Like, I know how to be everyone else, but I have no idea how to be myself. Because, you know, when you're performing and creating characters all the time, it's like, yeah, they're all a little you.
Yeah.
But they're not all you.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So you've been traveling a lot doing stand-up. What, do you think you'll travel more, or are you trying to...
Are we recording, by the way?
Yeah, here
we are. Oh, see, that's what I thought we were putting on headphones and stuff. So
we can put
like,
on headphones.
Oh, no, we don't have to. I was just laughing because I was like, oh, we're still not recording. I was like, okay.
No. That we can put on headphones. In fact, I was like, here. I pulled it out of the way so we weren't, so we didn't have the food on it and stuff like that. So
I just, it's so funny. I had no idea what was happening. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Well, I went over there and I pressed record. And then I told you about how I'd press record.
I shouldn't get stoned before recording stuff.
No, it's fine. That's actually kind of how we do it with everybody, really. Sorry, everyone who I just outed for being stoned in all of our podcasts.
We're now cleaning up queso in case
anybody's worried. No, it's fine. I was like, I actually like when we have food and stuff. Oh, wait, here, I'll put this here. Because I like hearing us crunch. Some people are not so into it, but I think it's funny. We're having a conversation. We're hanging out. What are we going to be... Wait, are we gonna pretend we don't eat?
No.
Oftentimes too, we'll do the podcast in the evening, like right when people get out of work. So it's
okay,
like, hey, they haven't had dinner.
Yeah, they need to
let them have dinner.
Yeah.
Oh, right on. All right. Cool. Yeah, I like the having the headphones makes it feel real legit.
It feels really, really special right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I was like, I tried to do this one time, and I'm going to do it just so it looks cool, but I told my husband that I was turning the mic towards the guest so that person's voice was the loudest,
mm-hmm.
and he was like, Amy, it's a 360 mic. It gets sound from every side. You are not doing anything. And I was like, So he's the technological one in our family.
Oh, that's so funny. I almost said something to him. Like, I feel like it's three. Okay.
No, absolutely. Yeah, no, I just like turning it around because it feels cool to look at, too. You get the headphones on.
Yeah.
We get the fancy mic. We're
mm-hmm.
like, oh, we are fancy
what kind of mic is
ladies.
That?
Oh, I have no idea. No, all the stuff in here is my husband's. He's very technological. He buys all sorts of equipment, and he always has some sort of, like, deep story about why each thing is the best thing to have. But, hey, it always sounds good, so who am I to complain? It's all perfect and wonderful.
Yeah.
And it doesn't break the bank too much, so it's okay.
Yeah, that's important. It's so cool you guys have your own space.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice. It's nice to have a little room, especially because we got the air conditioning in here, too. So
mm-hmm.
a little air-conditioned room so I can work and be creative, separate, and we can have our own spaces. Also, sometimes when I'm recording,
my podcast, my husband will come and hang out with one of his friends in one of the rooms down the hallways and just play, you know, guitar with them for 2-3 hours while I'm chatting with people.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
It's nice to be able to do that. That's one of the benefits of living in Austin. I recently read an article that said it was like one of the top freelancer cities. So, yeah. You know, it's not so expensive that you can't just live off of as much as you can sort of base make. And I was like, yeah, all right, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I wish that they were more, like, freelancer friendly in Los Angeles, but everyone's getting priced out of everything. The rents are going crazy there.
Yeah.
It's rough.
Yeah, absolutely. It's wild. I mean, it always has to do with how many people just want to live there. And because it's so exciting and everyone wants to be part of it, everyone's just rushing in, and that's why it gets so expensive.
There's all these high rises going in, and I'm like, who is affording these?
Oh,
like,
right?
There's no one here to, like, it's just insane. Thousands of dollars every month. Like, 3-4 for, like, a one-bedroom apartment. And it's like, but why? Why would you do that?
Yeah, I know. I thought that this time we were searching for a new rental, and I was like, someone remind me if I ever make a lot of money that more than $2,000 a month for rent of any space is too much.
It's too much.
Like, I don't want to pay $2,000. My husband was like, way less than that. And I was like, yeah, way less than that. But we're looking at a 2-bedroom right now. Of course it's way less than that.
Yeah.
If we want to move into a 5-bedroom house because we're doing real well, I still don't want to pay more than $2,000 a month.
It's crazy out there. Like, it's insane.
Yeah, it's so funny. Ugh. It's nice that you moved to a nice place so that you feel good about, and
I
you're in a
wait.
New spot, and it's going to give you a new outlook on everything.
What's going to be so funny is when I go back to, like, months later, years later, I'm going to go back to this point in my life and reflect, and I'm so excited about this apartment that it is, like, it's just gone into every other aspect of my life. Like, I started doing the artist's way, and all of my morning pages so far are like, all like, I can't wait for this apartment.
Yeah.
And, like, everyone I've talked to, and I'm gonna be, I hope it's everything it's cracked up to be.
Yeah.
Oh, 2 years from now, I'll be like, oh, that shithole? Like, what were you thinking?
Oh, I was recently listening to a, what was it? You Made It Weird, with Pete Holmes. And
okay.
He was talking to Kristen Schaal, and she was talking about shopping and how the reason why we like shopping and getting new clothing is because we don't have any history with the clothing yet. We've never had a bad day in that shirt. That's why we love that shirt more than all the rest of the shirts. And same with the apartment. You love this apartment more than anything because you've never had a bad day in the apartment yet.
Yeah.
You know, but that's okay. I mean, just stick with it. You know, if I've learned anything about long-term relationships,
I am
married. So, it's that even though you've had a bad day in that apartment, doesn't make the apartment bad. It just means a bad day happened. But
yeah.
That happens all the time.
I love that. That's such a cool analogy for that. Like, it's really neat. We all just haven't had a bad day in that shirt yet. That's great.
Yeah, I thought that was really sweet. And I was like,
so that
makes me feel so good about, like, just all sorts of things. Like, anything, you know, like the idea even that people will always be, grass is always greener about things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh man, I want to get out of my job because this other job that's very much exactly like it is definitely going to be better. And you're like, grass is always greener, which is, you've never been at that job when it was the hardest day at that job yet.
Yep.
So you don't know. So it's always like, take it as it comes, but don't put too much expectations on what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find that happens a lot with people in theater. You know, because you know, there's only so many, like, not everyone can be famous, right? So there's a certain amount of, like, I'm a big proponent of, like, let's just have a good time. Like, just enjoy the projects you get to do and the shows you get to be in, like, bit by bit before you, like, shut yourself down and be like, well, if I don't have a sitcom in the next 3 years, I'm out.
You can't put time restrictions on yourself like that. For me, I've always said that I'm like, as amazing it would be to have a bunch of money, it's kind of like, for me, I just want to be able to do what I want to do and survive off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just to, you know, just make sure that I can pay my bills doing what I love as opposed to working, you know, in a restaurant or whatever forever.
Yeah.
Even then, I'm still willing to do it, but, like, I've always heard those stories of people that's like, well, if I don't get my first co-star in 2 years, I'm leaving. And it's like, what you can't do it like that.
Yeah.
You just can't.
If you have a backup plan that's like legit in your mind and you're really gonna do it, just go do it and get out of the way.
Yeah.
Like, I've been working on projects for years, and my end game was never something crazy famous. I just wanted to work, and I've had fun times with fun people, and the end results are always fun, like, enjoyable to watch. When it's film, it's like, yeah, check that out. Or if it's not, it was like, oh, that was a wonderful night that we all got to experience and be part of, or, you know, I don't know. I've enjoyed it all, and it's like, yeah, I'd like money, too. That would be nice.
Yeah.
But not too much, just enough.
Just enough.
I mean, I'll take a lot.
I mean, I'm not turning bags of money down.
Yeah, I
Hollywood.
Mean, like...
But, yeah, it's so funny you say that about, like, it being about experiences. That's how I've kind of gone into this whole festival thing with, like, you know, at first you're like, I hope there's industry there. I hope people see me. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, you learn very quickly it is not about that. Like, if somebody does, great, but so much of it is the connections you make with the other people that are at the festival and how much fun it is to meet new people. You know, this, us sitting here is a perfect example, and just going out and just seeing who else is out there, what they're doing, and just experiencing different cities too. Like, one of my favorite trips so far, I went to Nashville, not for a festival, but just to do shows independently. And I went by myself, stayed with a couple different friends throughout the trip. And I mean, so many times I was off by myself just exploring the city. And everyone's like, where are you now? Like, are you okay? How'd you get there? What's going on? And I'm like, I'm fine. I'm just, I love exploring new cities. It's so much fun. It's the best.
It's nice to have a reason to do it too. Like, as opposed to just being like, oh, I'm gonna go to this place and check it out with no like plan or action or like reason to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to a certain extent, these are business trips for you.
Oh yeah. Oh, you best believe these are getting written off. I've already started.
Oh, you're so good.
Oh,
you're
man.
So good.
I already have a full color-coded spreadsheet going.
Oh.
It's my porn. Like,
that's nice.
I have to. There's like, I did, I think, 9 festivals plus another trip just to do the trip this year, which is insane. And I'm like, I have to write them off. Like, but I love what you're saying too about giving yourself a reason, because so like, yeah, like the idea of like going to a city just to see a city is nice, but it feels like a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And you always talk yourself out of doing something like that for yourself, where these, it's like, oh no, I'm going to work.
Yeah.
So even though a lot of it is playtime, you still have a reason to do it, and you won't talk yourself out of it.
Yeah, it gives you an excuse to see places that maybe you never would have visited, that it never would have occurred to you to take a trip there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because most of our travel has to do with, like, family or friends, specifically where they went.
Yep.
It's like, well, if I didn't have anybody that I knew live in this city, I would never go there.
Yeah.
But now you get to, and you get to make new friends, and I don't know, I appreciate what you're saying, too, about, like, when you go to those things, like, don't worry too hard about, like, networking. Like, it's not really like you're walking around handing your business card and going, like, yes, call me if you're ever looking for me. Like, okay.
Yeah, you just gotta go and just have fun. And so much of it will color your own writing, too. You know, like, trying to, like, spark weird circumstances that have happened to you and anything down the line. And even, like, you know, I've met a bunch of comics at these festivals where now I'm really close with. And we've been kind of ending up at the same festivals together and kind of have, like, a fun little unit that we've been kind of traveling through. Like, one of the girls, two of the girls that's on the festival, Catherine Jessup and Kate Jahoney, they're both, I've done, I think, 3 other festivals with both of them this year, which is so funny that they're just randomly all in the same circuit. Sophia, my friend that's here, too, like, you know, we've done almost every festival together, which has been ridiculous and so fun.
That's nice. It must be nice to have, like, a buddy, though, so that, like, you know, you're never, I guess, not so much unsafe, because, you know, unsafe's half the fun, but, like, but, like, you know, you have, like, a sort of a safety net while you're there.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Yeah, that's been pretty cool. 9. That's a lot.
Yeah. I got into 10. I turned 1 down. Because it was just, I couldn't do it. It was just,
yeah.
It was also, like, right around the same time. That's the thing that's so tough is that all of these are, like, clustered in the same time frame.
Yeah.
That it's, there was a few that I really wanted to do, but I knew enough not to apply because I had already, like, Hell Yes, I got into that. And so I didn't apply for Big Sky or for All Jane because they're, yeah. like, the same, they're all in the same 2 weeks. Like, there's no way that I can make all of those happen. It's just too crazy.
There's a certain time of year in Austin when it becomes crazy festival season. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, let's be honest, it's kind of like May through November. But, which is doesn't seem like a season when you think of it's more than half the year. But like, yeah, right after Hell Yes Fest. And I know Hell Yes Fest is in New Orleans, so it's not, like, technically Austin. But because it's part of, like, my theater circuit, it is. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, the weekend right after Hell Yes Fest is Austin Film Festival. So it's like I come home from that and then I go do Austin Film Festival stuff, and it's like I had I made another friend on Twitter and he was in New York and he was telling everyone to sign up for the New York Sketch Fest because he works at Pitt, and I was like, that sounds great, when is it? And it was the same weekend as Austin Film Festival, and I was like, remind me in 6 months so that I can make that what's on the calendar. Like, it's so funny how when you're doing these shows too, you have to plan like 2 or 3 months out, because not only just so you can like buy tickets or whatever, but also like because you're you know, you've got to plan ahead and make sure you don't overbook yourself, but also make sure that you're still doing enough in your own city so that people aren't like, oh, I don't know, that girl's gone, you know.
That's what's been so weird is doing all this travel. Like, I have to keep booking out even my agent. I'm like, hey, I'm going to be gone again. I'm like, I'm so sorry. But at least, like, voiceover stuff I've been able to audition for while on the road because I can just record on my phone and then send it in.
Sure.
But, like, the other stuff, the other day I was thinking, I'm like, I haven't gone out in a while. I'm like, oh, because you haven't, your body has not been in the city for so long. And it's crazy.
So then you're still doing just standard acting as well. You have an acting agent.
Yep.
Oh, cool.
I've been doing a bunch of commercials mostly, and still like short films and like TV stuff here and there. So I'm like trying to build up that resume.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's really great. Now, when you first moved to LA, were you like just planning on doing the acting and acting alone?
It's so funny. I was, and before I moved to LA, I had also taken like a 2-year sabbatical from performing because I got burnt out. I was doing a bunch of community theater, but I didn't really know what I wanted. And so I randomly got hired in the police department and was a 911 dispatcher for 3 years.
Wow!
Super random. And so I started doing that. And then
what?
It's so random.
That is such a crazy thing that you did in your life.
I know. You know what's funny too? In LA, my friend Aaron, who's a comic, Aaron Marsh, we went to go to an Angels game together, and we were talking. I was like, I'm so fascinated by people and what they do prior to doing stand-up, like what their day jobs are. And I was like, I have a really weird one that you would never guess. And he was like, what is it? And I told him, and he goes, I was a 911 dispatcher. And I was like, what? And we were both like just on this train ride. I'm like, we've been friends for how long? And neither of us knew that we were both 911 dispatchers.
Wow.
It's like such a random thing.
That's a wild job.
Yeah, it was weird. And like,
where were you at when you were doing it?
So
Boston.
It was outside the city. It was in one of the burbs. It was actually the school or the town that my high school was in. So I saw a lot of familiar faces. But I did. I worked there for
like, I thought so.
I was like, oh, yeah, not a surprise. But I was there for about 3 years, and I started dating one of the cops there. I was, you know, getting comfortable, and I was like, finally one day, I'm like, if I continue to do this, this is it. Like, this is your life. And they had offered for me to go to the Reserve Academy to become a cop, and I was kind of, like, slated to go, and I was the head dispatcher at that point, and I'm like, I can't do this. Like, this isn't what I want. And so I up and left. I told him I was sitting there like, what? And told my boyfriend, I was like, I gotta go. He's like, I'll come with you. And I was like, no, you won't. I was like, because the thing is, like, this is for me, and I can't drag somebody else down this road and be responsible for somebody else's happiness. Like, that's
also,
not
fair. So we kind of had a career going.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, hey, man.
Like, you've done what you need to do. Yeah. Like, you stay here. And I did, so I left, and I've never regretted it. But so when I got to LA, I hadn't even really, I've been doing a little bit of community theater again at that point. I kind of just started back in, but I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And the godsend was signing up for that Second City class, because I got to LA on a Monday and I started Second City on a Friday. And I literally, like, it saved me when I was there, because I met a whole crop of people that I befriended right away.
Yeah.
And fell into that community and that environment, and it was the best thing I could have done, because I didn't want to do what so many people do when they go to New York or Los Angeles. They don't have, it's not that they don't have any connections, but like, they just get into that party rut where all they're doing is going out all the time and they're not actually working towards their career. Like, I have so many friends that have been there for years and don't even have a headshot. It's like, what are you doing? Like, you came out here for this thing. Like, why would you continue what you could have done back home for way cheaper? Like,
yeah, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, New York does have a bit of an intoxicating vibe to it. It definitely, like, you get involved and you feel like you're part of something bigger. I don't know if you've ever lived or spent any time in New York.
I've been, but I've never lived there, but I love it.
I lived in New York for about 5 years or something in my, like, mid-20s, and it was like everything I wanted it to be. It was like, you know, big and crazy, and it felt like I was doing something real. And even to this day, I mean, these are credits from 10, 15 years ago, right? To this day, I tell people I did things in New York and it holds a level of clout.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, it doesn't matter. It was an open mic. Like, or like, yeah, I was part of this show, but it was pretty much just a bunch of friends who did this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, just it being in New York raised the level of it, and so you feel like you're doing more than you're doing while you're there, because everyone tells you that your shit don't stink.
Yep.
And that, like, but you're part of this.
Yeah. It's so funny going on, like, I started doing some shows, like indie shows, while I've been in town for the festivals, and the second that they hear that you're an LA comic, they treat you so differently. It's so funny. And it's like, no. Like, I can be just as terrible as the rest of y'all. Like, I promise you. But so it's very weird. And it's almost like, then you get nervous because you're like, let's take that bar down a couple of notches before I perform. Like, Jesus.
Yeah, absolutely. But, no, that's wild.
Ugh.
So then you got to LA after you were like, made the decision, you're changing your life, you get to LA, you've been doing acting. How long after you got there did you get an agent? Were you doing Second City for a little while before you did it?
I didn't get an agent for a while because I didn't really know what I was doing, and I also didn't want to get an agent too soon. Like, I knew I wasn't ready. I was like, I've always been an overachiever in that regard, where I've always loved classes in school, and so I almost got into a trap with it because I was taking so many classes, and somebody I was dating at the time was finally like, enough with the classes, like, get an agent. You have enough knowledge now and experience that there's no reason why you shouldn't have one. And I'm like, but, and he's like, just here, I'll refer you to mine. And so his ended up taking me on. That was my first agent. I was probably about 3 years in, so it had taken me a few years to even get an agent. And then I started going out for commercials and stuff, and the first commercial that I booked was the one that I was like, there's no way I'm getting this, because I had a really good audition, but I looked around the room and it was for a mom role, and I'm like, there's no way, like, I'm too young. Everybody else is like way older than I am. And then I got the call back and I was like, oh, it's just because I had a good audition. I'll humor them. And then I did it, and I was like, yeah, there's no way. And then, like, 20 minutes later, my phone rang, and I was on Avail. And I was like, what? And so me and then two other improvisers that I randomly know from Second City and elsewhere, the three of us got put in this big campaign for Golden Plump Chicken. Yes. And so
you were the mom.
I was one of the moms. We were the mom squad. Not even a joke.
Oh, yeah. No, I've seen that on your thing.
Yeah. So that was a saving grace, because they kept renewing it for like 3 years.
That's great.
So I got, like, and it was non-union, so it wasn't like a ton of money in like what you think of in commercial money, but
still
it was
regular.
A lot, and like helped out. So
yeah,
but that was my first one, and that was probably
so
like 4 years in. Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, it's funny. I also was lucky in that respect, where the first commercial I ever got, I got put in three of the, I wasn't the same character, but it was a campaign of commercials, and I got put in different ones.
Yeah.
So it was great. They just kept coming back. They they made the one, they liked it, and then they were like, well, let's keep the people and just keep changing up the situation. So it was great. It was wonderful to have, like, a few in a row. I haven't done too many more since that, more film stuff than commercials lately, or voiceover stuff. But
isn't it so funny how it just changes your whole worldview when you book something? Because it just gives you that sense of worth again. And it is like, it's like you almost start booking more after that, even if they don't even know about the thing you booked, just because you have that confidence in your brain. Where you're like, no, yeah. I am good enough to do this.
It's like when you're dating and then everyone wants to fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, no, I can't. And they're like, really?
And you're like, well, let me think about it. No, I still can't.
Right?
You're totally right. Yeah, I've never been hit on more than when I'm in a relationship. And then when you get out of one and you're like, oh, why the dry spell? Like, what's happening?
Yeah, why does no one find me attractive? I'm literally putting on so much makeup. What? And you're like, wait, it wasn't the makeup or this great dress that I'm wearing? What?
Oh, it was the fact that I valued myself as a human being in front of you. Damn
bastards.
It. Damn it.
How dare you recognize me? Oh, that's funny. Crazy. So, what's your like hope for the next? And it doesn't even need to be like a long term goal or whatever. Like, oh, I want to be on this or
like
whatever.
By the age of 57, I would like.
Well, no, I mean, I have long term goal. I actually have a theory. Sorry, Anit, you're listening to this again. I have this theory about 18 years that you're growing up and being told you're an adult marked like the beginning of a cycle that you're on, and that at that point you then go back to the beginning.
Yeah.
So like think of 18-year-olds when they're high school seniors, you're all like, look at them, they're on top of their game, they're doing it. And then when they become college freshmen, you're like, you don't know anything.
Yeah.
You're nothing. Yeah. You're the bottom of the totem pole again.
Yep.
So you become a baby again, and then you have to figure out who you are. And especially now in the world that we're in, 20s are not something 20s are not something where you're like really settling down like they used to. And I think that's the case because we live longer, so we have more of it.
We have more time.
And now it's like you get to do your second 18. I mean, think about it. I don't know how many, I don't know what the age range of your friends are or whatever, but 18 plus 18, right, is 36. Most people only just get their shit together about around 36.
I'm 31, so I'm on my way.
Yeah. But it's like you get to another level. Like when I turned 36, I realized that I had accomplished a goal that I knew 18-year-old me wanted.
Yeah, that's such a great way to put that.
And I was like, great. So I was like, well, what do I want to do now? And I've tried to set far off goals that I don't feel like I'm beholden to deal with. Like I'm just getting there. I'm just developing to the next level. You know, I'm a few years north of 36. So it's like, I'm just a baby. I'm just refiguring out the next level of my career. You know, I got to do this thing, crossed it off the list. And then it's like, yeah, I don't know what happened. Sorry.
I was like, I may have also stepped on something. So it's cool. Sounding good? Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I see it. Oh, but, you know, like, I feel like if you set yourself a really long-term goal, but not everybody does that. So in my mind, and my question to you, because in case you're not a long-term goal kind of person like I am, if you had, like, the next thing that I'd be interested in doing is this,
it's
what are you thinking?
It's funny that you should say that, because I would like to point out this tiny little notebook that I have in my purse.
Yes.
And I have my goals for 2016 written in.
Great!
So I
told
you.
That's so wonderful.
I am so obnoxiously organized with stuff that, like, this is what gets me up in the morning.
No, you know what's funny? Is, like, I'm like, way more excited that we're friends now. Because, and that we've met in the flesh. And it's so nice to meet you. Because I am also, like, neurotically organized.
Oh.
And I'm always, people always, like, no one does the things that I do. And then they're like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is how you set up. How do you write?
Yeah.
I write the structure and then I fill it in.
Yeah.
And I was like, how do you create a schedule? I create the schedule and then fill it in.
Yeah.
Like, I need to make my life a Mad Libs, but, you know.
It's so true. So, like, so yeah.
I love how organized you are. Yes.
I am.
You don't have to share, like, everything.
I won't.
You
I won't.
Share,
but,
like, a thing we chat about.
One of my things was get accepted into a cool comedy festival was one of my goals for this year.
Great.
And then I got crossed it off 9 times.
Nice.
And so like that was one of them.
I think it's important to write them down.
Yeah. Like that was one. Another one was move into a nicer apartment with parking. I get to cross that off.
Yeah, you did.
Do your first half hour, which I did. Which was, I mean, you can only go up, but it was.
But it's important to be able to do the long form. There's not a lot of opportunities like in an open mic setting.
Not in LA to learn how to do that much stage time.
Yeah, you just can't. And the problem is, it's like writing. You know, yeah, I can write a sketch, but can you write a 35-minute thing? I don't know.
I don't know.
You know, so that's a great accomplishment. No,
if
absolutely.
You're like 10-minute set. Followed by 20 minutes of crowd work.
Yeah, like, right?
It's like, no, I have a 30. It's like, no, that's not, that doesn't count. Like, you can't.
Yeah, the only person that works for is Doug Benson, so, you know.
Yes. let's see. What else was on my list? Book my first co-star was one of them, like a network thing. So that hasn't happened yet, so just putting it out there.
That's good. There's a few more months to go in this year. That's a great thing to do. Especially you'll be back fresh from all of your travel. You'll be so excited to be in LA, so you won't be jaded like the other people that they'll see.
I'm literally going to be like, look at the festivals I've done this year. Like, this is why you haven't seen me before, is because I've been in every other state. But like, pick me. One of the other ones.
I was like, if you ever have, you're in an audition and they're like, oh, we haven't met you before. I'd be like, oh, well, where are you from? It's like, Minnesota. Well, I was in Minnesota doing a comedy festival.
Hey.
Oh. You know what I'm talking about, right, fella?
Like, right?
It's like this guy who's just like, what?
Everyone's like, what is going on?
He's the intern. You're like, all of a sudden it's a stand-up show, but it's this audition. Like, what's happening?
And I'm like, who here is married? it's so uncomfortable.
It's so great, actually, though. If you really know you're bombing, like, just go into
just,
it.
Just, like, totally took it over. And all like, right. I think that girl has some serious issues.
I suppose the longevity of that is a bad idea. Yeah. We like her. Put her on a reality
show.
Like
it.
Could she fall in love with someone, you think?
With or without money? Let's get crazy.
There's going to be those. You know there are. It was like princes and shit, but now it'll be like, this guy's on welfare. He lives in a one-bedroom apartment with his brother and his mother and his 14 cousins. Do you want to be part of him? And it's like about true love.
You know what would be amazing is if they did a show. I'm going to, let's do it right here. Let's start a reality show called Prince or the Pauper, and where you literally have to go out on a date with two different men who they basically like give makeovers to, and you don't know which one's the one that's broke and which one's the one that has money.
Mm-hmm.
And then you like have to choose which one you're gonna like continue to see or whatever, and you don't find out until you make your decision, and then there's the reveal. And the best part would just be a real slow close up on the girl's face, like when she finds out.
In both ways. Like, is she super psyched, or is she really disappointed?
Or is she like,
and
oh,
what's
no.
happening?
Like, no, can we recount the votes? Like, I think that would be so funny.
The follow-up sort of to the dating game situation would be like, what they win is a date that like matches the like money level. So it's either like a really fancy restaurant, or it's like a $10 gift certificate to McDonald's.
Oh my God. So funny.
That's a good one. I was like, we're pitching this right now.
Yeah, who's out there?
Listen,
we're trademarking
network.
It.
Clearly, network executives are listening to my podcast. Okay. I was like, there's a lot of putting ourselves down, for sure.
Oh, my, yeah, well, I mean, they need to know. They need to know that exists.
I talked over you, and I knew you were trying to bring up the, like, the other goal that you were feeling strong about.
What was the other one? I've never auditioned for Last Comic Standing. I would like to do that.
Oh.
Even if I didn't get on, I would just like the experience of auditioning. Because I had a friend who did, what did he do this year? He did America's Got Talent. And I always forget that some of those shows have like a stand-up portion that you can audition for.
They're not very nice about it, so I wouldn't, unless you're like, you know what, I need to learn how to deal with direct heckling. Like, I wouldn't worry about it. That's not me. Okay, great.
Yeah, I actually, it was funny because my show last night, I got heckled, but not like in a bad way. Like, he actually, it's so.
It's like a nice heckle?
It was so funny.
Or a fix your joke
a
heckle.
Nice, I need to let everyone know that I think this joke is funny heckle. Like, I said something, and I recorded it, I should listen to it. And he said something, And, like, he was like, yeah, that's funny. And it was so loud. And I literally, like, whipped around. I was like, did you just validate my joke for me? And everyone was, like, losing it. And I was like, thanks, I really needed that. And I, like, leaned into my phone because it was recording on the stool on stage. And I was like, keep that one. And then, like, everybody lost it. And then it was just, like, it was just this running bit, like, throughout the set. And I kept turning to him and I was like, like, for other ones. And I was like, I'm going to haunt your dreams tonight, sir. I'm so sorry that I made you the face of the set. And he did it again, like, accidentally. And I was like, did you just do it again? And his wife was like, yes, he did. I don't know what's wrong with him. It was so funny.
She's all embarrassed that he's being nice.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was super funny.
Well, you know what's funny? Austin audiences are pretty primed for comedy. There's a lot of comedy here on a regular basis. And there's a couple of sweet comedy festivals.
Yeah.
So it's nice. Because they get used to it.
It's so nice to have audiences be excited for comedy again.
Yeah, right?
Like, in LA, everyone's just it's so super saturated that it's hard to get people to shows because there's just so many shows happening all the time.
There are a lot happening in Austin, too. I mean, because there's 5 improv theaters plus... Here, like that?
There we go.
Right on. There's 5 improv theaters plus, like, multiple, just stand-up venues. And places that are random, like coffee shops and stuff, that have open mics.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's just so much of it that, yeah, I mean, you could potentially not go because there's just so much. It's overwhelming in that way. But I feel like there's a good enough crowd of people in Austin that are like, I'm into that kind of stuff. I'm going to go around and support different things. Because there's lots of, like, regular patrons that will start to meet, will start to realize they come to shows a lot. And it's not always people who eventually become students. Sometimes it's just, like, you know, an older couple that comes every Friday, and that's their date night, and so they, like, hang out with us every time, and they're like, this one's fun and new, or, like, what's this week, you know?
Oh, cute.
Those kinds of things. So, you know, there's people that care.
Yeah.
And that's nice.
Yeah, it's always nice to feel like people are actually listening and really enjoying themselves at your show, and you're like, oh, yeah, that happens. Like, in LA, you just get used to kind of doing shows for either friends that have seen you a million times, or, like, it's just empty. There's just not as many people. I always laugh when I think about, like, coffee shop shows, where I would have loved to have been in, like, the pitch meeting for that. You know what I mean? Like, hey, let's take the quietest spot and disturb everyone with this idea. Like, that makes me laugh so hard. It's like what?
Yes, have you ever been to a library and thought, like, you know what would make this better? Stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Stand-up comedy. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like every time I'm in a library, I think, I wish there was a person with a microphone making jokes and potentially talking to me directly.
And, like, I really want to make sure that we all get heated and so angry at somebody trying to make a coffee while we're trying to do our jokes. Like, who do they think they are? Like, I'm sorry, is that a Frappuccino machine? You're interrupting my set.
The second rule of being a great performer is being mad at the venue that you're at.
Yeah, oh,
are
yeah.
Are they pouring beer too loud? Was that bartender telling somebody how much it costs too loud? I'm sorry. I'm very upset about what's going on here.
Who told you could get ice during my set? Like...
Was there a clink and a clank? That's going to throw me off my entire vibe here.
I would have had a good set, but then, you know, Steve over there felt the need to sing happy birthday to somebody. And it's like you can't do that.
I like the idea that, like, you're doing it now. Now I'm imagining stand-up in a Chili's where, like they're just tables and they're not paying attention to you. You're just in the corner like, yeah, anyway, so... You guys know what I'm talking about. This guy with the Southwestern egg rolls, am I right? And then all of a sudden it's somebody's birthday and they come in, happy, happy birthday, we know it's you, you know, whatever it is. And that person has to stop because they're not the main attraction anymore.
I think that show is like when you know you should go home. Like when you know when you just shouldn't be doing it anymore.
Yeah, but like I've worked more than my fair share of corporate events that were like where like we're the comedy. Even though I don't really do stand up, I've definitely hosted and done a sort of stand up ish at corporate events because mm-hmm. we get hired because they're like, oh, well, you guys will be funny, right? Great. So can you just be the host of this thing? And then you're like, sure, but... And also, I mentioned earlier, and I'll talk about it now, that I worked for the, this murder mystery thing.
Oh, fun.
And so... from the very beginning, the guy who ran it realized, I acted in it a bit, but then he realized I was real neurotically organized, like we were talking about. And so now he's got three cities that it grew, and now he manages three cities. So now I host a lot of the shows. But hosting the shows means talking to like 100 people and getting them like excited to play this murder mystery game that they like signed up for, but like I can't tell you the number of people.
You still have to convince them, and it's like, you paid for this.
Yeah. I mean, it's like when you think of comedy, too. It's like, you paid to come to this comedy show. Did you or did you not walk into a room where comedy was written above the door? And you said, hey, person who's going to sell me a ticket, what's this about? I mean, I've told many people about the shows right at the front desk because they're not paying attention. Great. So I'll tell you, they've told you, I'm sure of it. I've met the interns.
Yeah.
And they tell you what the show is, and then you're like, great, I'm going to comedy. And then you're like, what's up with this shit? And you're like... Which part of any level of introduction confused you? Then there's a host who's like, this is a comedy show. Welcome to a comedy theater. And you're like, what is happening?
Oh, it's so weird. And like the people that go to shows and then they just like, they sit and they just talk the whole time. And it's like, you're not in a bar. Like, there are drinks here. This is not a bar. Like,
in a theater setting, come on.
My biggest pet peeve when I go to concerts too is when they play a ballad and you're like, all you want to do is like be in that moment and listen to that song, and then you've got fucking, you know, Karen and Sarah behind you that are like, ah, like the whole time, and you're like, this is the song you had to talk this loudly during? Like, this is the one. Like, you can't choose the right Snapchat filter on the next song? Like, you know what I mean? Like, get out of here. That drives me insane. And you can hear it. Like, you can hear all the little individual conversations during the ballads, and I'm like, you fucking monsters.
Yeah, right? And you know they can hear it, too. I mean, the performers up there being like, I'm putting my heart and soul into this love song because it's a very popular song with this crowd, and yet right now, they can't just fucking shut up and listen to it.
Like, I never want a man to ever make me feel like the ballad on the band's new CD that gets played for the first time and no one knows the song and no one wants to listen to it.
As a performer, I never want to feel that
I
way.
I never want to feel like that. Don't anyone ever make me feel like that.
Don't put baby in a corner. Oh my God, so funny. Well, you know what? This has been a nice chat. I think this is a nice little quick chat about, you know, being a part of this stuff, and it's super fun. And thank you for sharing your goals. You're so sweet to, like, open up in a real way.
Oh, I was like, here we go. I'm like, let's
You're
do
like,
this.
Thank God you've asked, because I had been waiting so I could tell someone.
Oh, my God. What's so funny, too, is, like, this is so nice because it is, like, a nice little safe environment and fun. But, like, I can't even tell you how many times where, the cover of this notebook says, every accomplishment starts with the decision to try, which is a very nice little thing.
So great.
But when you're friends with a bunch of D-bag comics, I can't even tell you how many times that I've gone to like a mic or a show and I always leave the notebook face down so no one sees, oh, I don't know, the positive thing on the front of it.
Yeah.
Because the ration of shit I have gotten. And then they're like, what the hell is this? And they open it and they're like, are these your goals? Like, and I'm like, oh, guys, like, yeah. Like, these are goals. You should have some.
It's weird how that is, you know what I mean? Because I find like in an improv community, it's very positive and everyone's trying to spur each other on in a good way. Mm-hmm. Whereas, with stand-up crowds, it's a bit harder. But I mean, to be honest, I kind of feel like it's more real to like the shit you have to take to maintain it.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, yeah, develop a thick skin now with your friends, because someday it's strangers in a corporate event staring at you and somebody goes, when's the band gonna start? And you're like, no. Very soon, sir. Very soon. All right. Who's having a great time? This guy is. And that's what you're doing, and that's your job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things that my dad said to me, where he was like, he goes, I was like, you know, my dad had come to my first stand-up show. Or not my first one, but like the first one he came to, I should say. And I was like, what'd you think? And he goes, yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. And I was like, what do you mean? What the hell does that mean? And he goes, I bred you for this. He's like, all the shit that I've given you your entire life, and we've all given each other, he's like, I am not surprised that somebody in this family finally started to be like, you know what? I should do stand-up comedy.
Oh, my like, God.
I'm like, oh, man. And that made me laugh so hard, because I'm like, Dad, like, I just remember trying to go into college for theater. My dad's like, but how about this math class? And I'm like, never. But now that I'm like, I'm going to do stand-up. Suddenly, I'm like, my dad is living vicariously through me. And he's so proud of me. It's so funny. I'm like, really, Dad? The thing that's literally not going to make me money for at least a decade is like the thing that you're like, yes, do it. And he even told me, he's like, I've always wanted to. He's like, I think I'd be good. He's like, I've always wanted to do stand-up.
That's so funny. And I was like,
will you promise me that if they take you to an open mic that you will try it? He's like, I would do it. I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah, but it can't be one in town because I don't want anyone to see me that I know.
Oh, like in Boston.
Like, it would have to be, like, somewhere else if he wouldn't know anybody.
Yeah. Because he's already... come visit you in L.A. and then do one there.
I know. He's already horrified because a lot of his coworkers, when they found out that I do comedy, have searched for me on the internet. And so I've subsequently watched some of my sets and come in the next day. And they're like... Your daughter says that you and your wife are sex crazed potty parents. and he's like, my boss won't look at me anymore. She gets freaked out. And I'm like, well, maybe you should keep it in your pants, Dad. I am merely a vessel.
I'm just passing on the truth. I am not making up stories.
Oh, my God. Like, my mom, I have a bit about my mom smuggling pot on the plane. And she's like, you need to stop telling that bit. I was like, you need to stop smuggling weed is what you need to do. I was like, this is what happens. I'm like, nothing is sacred in this family. I'm like, I'm talking about it.
That's so funny. Oh man. She'll be fine. It's decriminalized in Massachusetts now, and it'll be legal in about a minute everywhere else.
It really just should be. It's so stupid. It's like...
It's so funny. When they started talking, like, legitimately about Texas turning, I was like, well, that's it. This is the only place that I thought maybe wouldn't. You know, like, I figured every other 49 other states, and they'd be like, Texas, I don't know. But when they said it, immediately, yeah. I was like, oh, shit, this is happening.
I think the last one, if I had to guess, I say Oklahoma will be the last one. Maybe even Arkansas. Like, one of those.
Hmm. You know what? I feel like it'd be a state, and I don't know if Oklahoma or Arkansas would be one of those states, but I feel like it would be a state where, like, perhaps the ground or the agriculture would not
support
really be able to support it, the specific style of growing it, so that they technically would have to farm out the purchase of it to have it in there, and it would still be some other state getting sort of the tax revenue, as it were.
Yeah.
Well, Lord knows. I mean, Marlboro will take it up in a minute. We'll all have green cigarettes like in the at the end of Weeds. Spoiler alert, anyone who hasn't watched Weeds as a television show.
Oh, my God. I was like, what? Aw.
Sorry.
It's ruined.
Yeah, that gives away everything that happens. I know.
I think that... they would just greenhouse it, wouldn't they? Most of it's in greenhouses anyway.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know, I'm just thinking, like, whatever state would be the last one would be the one where they can't figure it out in a, like, how do we make money off of it? Because it's so easy to make, like...
Oh, yeah.
If you... Once the model of Colorado was out there where they were like, no, our tax revenue's way up, like, we have all this extra money now, like, we're good.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, great. So we've learned that works out. I wonder if California would do better to take more taxes versus make it medicinal.
Yeah.
So then they could make a little bit of money off of it. You know, it's at the end of the day, that's how they make all these decisions. It's not like they're ever thinking, what do people want or not want? They're like, can we as a state make money from doing this action? Yes, no. If it's no, then they're not going to do it. But if they can find a way to make the money, heck yeah, they'll do it.
I just worry about the price of it getting crazy because you've seen what's happened.
And the quality.
Well, yeah. Well, you've seen what's happened with alcohol, too, you know? That it's like, I mean, in L.A., a beer, unless it's happy hour, almost any place a beer is not less than, like, $7 or $8 for just a beer.
Yeah, but New York and L.A. are kind of on par in the way that they're, like, the major cities of this country, so they're more expensive in that way. I mean, I heard San Francisco's killing everyone with how much everything costs all the time.
I mean, people can't even afford to stay there anymore.
Yeah, it's going to go Detroit hardcore.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, too, is it's like, we just, hopefully all of us, every state, every city can... since we have the internet and are able to check each other out, can learn lessons from each other's mistakes. Like, it's like, ooh, wait, let's not do that. Look, this city in Wyoming did it. Failed the whole town. Like, yeah. Okay, let's watch out, let's watch out.
Yeah.
Like, at least we can do those kinds of things. And I think Austin's very wary of becoming San Francisco.
Yeah.
Because it's getting expensive to live here, and it's getting pretty intense. But it's still easygoing in the way. They still really highly respect art. Like, there are so many artists, like, charities and foundations and, like, places where, like, legit, I got an email right after we moved that there's this group that was giving, like, really cheap housing to artists. And I was like, but we are those people.
Yeah.
Like, my husband and I are those people. I mean, we don't have other jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, I do temp gigs, but that's mostly for the stories. Every once in a while, I hang out with too many theater people, and then I realize, like, I don't understand the world,
mm-hmm.
because I'm like, well, I don't know what having a job is, because my husband's nice enough that his job makes a lot of money, and then I just can continue to do theater all the time and be writing and working on it, which is great, but it's very insular,
yep.
And then I forget the world. I forget, like, everyone isn't just attractive, and which is why sometimes I'm like, don't blame Hollywood. They don't know that everyone isn't attractive. And they're like, oh, sure. And I was like, no, legitimately, they don't see them.
Yeah.
Like, they're not in front of them. They would cast them if an ugly guy swinged in that room. And that's usually why they do. Because they're like, look at him. He is interesting. You know what I mean?
Oh,
but,
he's weird.
But everybody else is, you know, just attractive. Because, like, what was it? I was talking to somebody about how I hang out at my theater all the time at the New Movement. And it's like, yeah, everybody's very attractive. Like, they're theater people. They want to be on stage. They want people to look at them. They've worked on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't see unattractive people. So, like, being married and being in the crowd is always like, guys, could you just for a second look bad?
I know.
Just like, for a second.
Like, chill out, man.
It's like a bow tie every day. God damn it, you're adorable. Why? I am trying to stay married.
Like, did you need to flat iron your hair every single time you leave the house?
Like, but so I sometimes actually legitimately think that. Like, I'm like, it's not their fault. That's all the actors they see. They're so attractive. They're working hard at it. And there's also makeup like artists and hair stylists who make you look so great.
Yeah.
I was like, that's why they look so good.
Yeah. It's crazy to see people when they're like dressed down. And then there are some people that always look the same. Like, Sarah Silverman does not age, and she just always looks phenomenal, I feel like.
Yeah.
Even, like, one of my friends was saying that she was, like, in the lobby of a hotel she was staying at, like, randomly writing, and walked by and was like, who's that stunning woman? And was like, oh, that's Sarah Silverman, just, like, working on her set. And just, like, she just always looks good.
Yeah. Well, some people are just genetically have a good predisposition to, like, not age. Like, their skin is good, and mm-hmm. they, like, are able to just sort of seem ageless. We were talking about Paul Rudd the other day.
Oh.
And how, like, that man looks exactly the same as the day he was in Clueless. And that was 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, maybe 30. He legitimately hasn't aged a bit. And, like, I'm sure he's eating well and taking care of himself. I mean, he has to with the superhero movies and the running around and all that. But it's, like, still, he's got some good genes, because he is not aged, and he just looks like, he just looks like a handsome man, and he doesn't age. It's so crazy.
Yeah.
I said, whatever deal with the devil Paul Rudd has, I want, and I will take.
I will sign it.
And whatever, that seems fine. Sure, sure. I watch a lot of Twilight Zone. I'm schooled in these possibilities. I got it. What, take it.
Did
what
you watch Stranger Things?
Yes.
It's so good.
Oh, yeah, no, I love it. I love it as well. But interestingly, my friend very recently had said that that was a show where it was like, why does everyone have to be attractive? And I was like, who do you think auditioned for the show? Who showed up to the auditions? The ugly people? No. They don't want to act.
It's kids, too. It's like there's not a whole, it doesn't center around a lot of adults. It's a lot of kids.
And the thing about kid actors is you kind of have to be pretty, like, you have to have a lot of experience, mm-hmm. even if you're super young. Like, I found out the kid with the teeth, the one with
Dustin,
the curly hair.
He's so cute.
He was in, like, Les Mis, like, on Broadway and shit.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me right now?
I know.
He's, like, a legit theater stage actor? Because that holds higher credence to me. When I know that a person can physically play a character for 10 minutes or 20 minutes or an hour, yeah, then film is cool. But if you just do film, it's like, yeah, I've done film. So you act in 5 minutes of the scene, and then you move. and then you act in 5 more minutes. You get that time to think about it, mm-hmm. develop whatever it is, yeah. to talk to the person, because you're sitting around. But that doesn't happen in theater, so you have to be, like, in it. So whenever I see, like, these kids, like, who are in stuff, and I'm like, eh, whatever. And then it's like, oh, okay.
Oh,
I see what's up.
Talk to me about your credits.
I mean, but like that little girl, 11.
She's so good.
She's like, I was like, I want her to be in everything. Be the next Natalie Portman.
I said the same thing. Those are exactly literally right the there. Exact words I used. I was like, she's the next Natalie Portman.
Yeah. She'll be in all sorts of, because she's like, it's so serious, the kind of stuff that she's, and I have to constantly remind myself when I watch these shows, like, it's entirely possible that this child never sees any of the things that are like super horrifying that they're like showing happens. Mm-hmm. Like, she's just in a room going like, ah, like, they don't have to tell her what it's about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In the way that it's like, it's not fucking her up.
Yeah.
Hopefully. But it's like so serious and so dramatic, the kind of work that she had to put in. Mm-hmm. It's like, she is a child.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, she was so good. And she didn't speak for friggin' 90% of the, spoiler alert, 90% of the thing. I swear, so many people haven't watched it yet, though.
I was talking to my friends today. I'm like, how have you not seen that yet? It's so good.
Winona's when it came out.
Comeback. Where has she been? It was shoplifting.
I thought about that. Was this the first time that she could get back?
It sucks, too, because it's like you make one bad decision, and then suddenly that's what people remember. Never mind, like,
all the great movies Heathers that we enjoyed her in.
Or Beetlejuice and everything else, and it's like,
ugh. Raven, wasn't she? No, that wasn't her. I was going to say, she is something. There's some sci-fi movie where she plays the mom, and not this one, huh?
Is there another one where she's a mom? I think this was like her...
Her mom debut?
Yeah. mom debut.
Yeah, well, we all have to have one. You had yours. Did I play anyone's mom ever? No, not yet.
It's happened so many times now in commercials. I did the Lay's commercial where I was a mom. I'm just laughing now. I'm like, America wants to see me with a kid as much as my mother does.
Have you ever had to work with a kid?
I mean, on that commercial, yeah. Because I had, they matched me to
a child.
A kid. This little ginger kid. And it was so funny. Like, I knew I was going to get it because of that. Like, when we walked in the room together, the director was like, oh, I believe they're related. And I was like, and we are in the back. I was like, this, it was so funny. But he was like, this is a non-union shoot. And he's a very sweet kid. Very rambunctious, though. And there's no, like, wrangler for the kid when it's non-union. So I'm the one that's, like, trying to get the kid not to, like, be an idiot on set, you know? Because he was young. He was maybe, like, 8, you know?
His parents weren't there?
His mom was there, but she can't be, like, you know, next to him when we're shooting. And so we're trying to, like, shoot stuff, and he would just kept, like, doing... We're supposed to be in a grocery store, so he's got, like... He's, like, messing with stuff, and I'm like, don't touch that. No. Put your hands down by your sides. Pay attention. Don't talk. You know what I mean? I'm like... It's a good thing this isn't, like, a highly intense role right now where I need to, like, prepare and I don't have to, like, pop out every 2 seconds to yell at this kid.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was like, oh, no, I'm in it. I'm yelling at a child right now. I was like, I am a mom
now. You provided them excellent B-roll in case they wanted to show the mom and son interacting.
Yep. too funny.
But you watch the commercial later and you're like, oh, I didn't know they were filming. That's me yelling at that kid for touching stuff. Don't touch that kid. Take some Lays.
Here you are.
So nice to talk to you. Yeah. We can probably stop doing it now, and I appreciate it.
Sure. Had a blast.
Sweet Valerie Tosi, correct?
Tosi.
Tosi.
Like Valerie Tosi.
All right, Valerie Tosi. She's... one of our only guests that isn't from Austin, so I'm excited to have it.
Happy to be here.
All right. Cool. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the Yes But Why podcast.